The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets are immune to headwinds. Banks report and drop. Amazon's at it again. And our guest today, Frank Curzio. From Curzio Research, all this and much more on episode number 571 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Welcome to July. Well, at least the second week of July. Welcome to the heat. Welcome to the summer. Hey, this is Andrew Horowitz, and I'm the host here at the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And thanks for joining me, as always, each and every week. We get together talking with some good friends and guests and people in the investment arena that really know their stuff. I always get such an amazing wealth of information. I find it remarkable, the information and the ability to get just a little bit smarter from all of our guests. And today we have Frank Curzio with us. Now, before we get to that, you've been watching the Wimbledon? You've been watching the tennis? I'm not just talking about tennis. I'm talking about some unbelievable matches, just amazing matches that have been some of the best tennis I've seen in a long time. I mean, the men's matches over the week have been extraordinary. One of them, 6 hours. 6 hours for a match. We saw that the women's matches were just incredible. Final was just so-so. But we are looking forward to the next potential crowning of the men's championship tomorrow on Sunday. We're taping this a little bit early this week. So it's been pretty exciting. Pretty good stuff. I like it. Well, let's, before we get to our guest, talk about what's going on with the markets. And yeah, so markets have been rather, well, just saying, who cares about some of the stuff that's going on around the world? Things here are just fine. I don't care about what's going on with the Fed, or so much what's going on with tariffs. We're looking forward to earnings. That's what the market's saying. Looking forward to seeing a really robust earnings season on the heels of last earnings season, which was blockbuster. And stocks are just plowing higher. Even on any news where we see that there's a dip that's quickly bought up, more than just buy the dip, it's quickly bought up. And I think that's all about the idea that why wait? Let's get in now. Investors are pretty hungry. There's money still floating around. Money's coming here to the U.S. because around the world, we're seeing that there's a lot of problems. I mean, Latin America's in just horrible shape. Emerging markets are seeing, massive drives lower. We're seeing that even in developed markets around the world, like Europe and Japan, man, their markets aren't doing so well. Investors are not really interested in that. So what's happening is that money's pouring over here as the best market around the world again. So each time there's some movement on the downside because of maybe some geopolitical event or maybe even some real economic news that maybe is not as great as it should be, or this tariff discussion, that seemed to be a buying opportunity left and right, and money is flowing in, and we had a great week overall for markets on the heels of the fact that you thought things were going to start blowing up. In fact, there was some technical indicators that were showing that markets really were starting to get questionable, and just as that hit the lows, the area that would be a breakdown, they picked it right back up. That's good. That's a sign of a strong market condition. When the technicals can't break, and when there is the opportunity with all the news out there that says, hey, you know what? Things aren't so good for one reason or the other, and markets start cascading, and you have the rest of the world doing the same, and our market just stays good. Now, in all fairness, there is a concentration of stocks, once again, like we saw back in 2016, that are really holding up a lot of things. I mean, a good portion of the S&P's return this year has been, we'll say, blamed on or benefited from the advances in stocks like Facebook and Amazon and Microsoft, and to a lesser degree, Google, Netflix. These mega caps have really been charging on strong with immense returns throughout the year. And if you look at them in relationship to the size of the companies, their market capitalization, and how they are represented inside of the index, there is a tremendous amount of upside that they have really provided for the markets. And that's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a fact, something you need to know. When we see sometimes that there is this narrowing of breadth, or at least we are seeing a lot of stocks do well. So the breadth isn't necessarily narrow, but the concentration of returns is narrow. That's something to really take notice of. Now, let me give you some examples. Howard Silverblatt, we've had him as a guest many times over at Dow Jones S&P Indices, wrote a tweet this weekend that he talked about a few things. And he mentioned that, I'll give you the tweet here, Amazon is up 55% year to date, and it contributes 18.9% of the S&P 500's year to date returns. Microsoft is up 24.5%, contributes 12.5%. Apple up 14%, and that contributes 10% of the returns. Netflix is up 106% this year, and that provides 6.5% of the returns. Year-to-date, IT, or information technology, is up 16%, and that contributes 67% of the S&P 500 returns. So when you look at these, what I mentioned, four or five stocks here, they're probably about 40% of the total S&P 500 return for this year is concentrated in just those names. So I ask you, is that something to be concerned about? Well, not if you own those stocks, right? I mean, if you own those stocks, you're happy as a clam. But if you own other stocks that maybe are not contributing as much, or that just kind of plowing along and just being swept up in the full index valuation, and whereas you have a lot of passive investors and passive ETFs and investment styles that are passive through mutual funds, if all of those things are actually getting just swept up due to the fact of these few names, is that an area to really be concerned about? Consumer discretionary up 14% for this year, almost 15%, contributing 30% of the return. IT, information technology, 67% of the return. Then you have consumer staples taking down the index. You have financials taking down the index. You have industrials taking down the index. You have materials taking down the index. And the rest, whether it's real estate, a little bit from energy, is just, you know, holding on there. So it's a very, you know, all those people saying, oh, it's a broad-based rally. Yeah, it is a broad-based rally if you look at the stocks that are in the indices that are doing well. But it really isn't necessarily a broad-based rally overall. We have a lot of names at the top, the big boys that are being maybe used as safe haven plays right now. Big cash hoarders, those that are doing massive buybacks, that are the ones that are holding up markets. I'll tell you this, if in fact we do see any break in these, for whatever the reason, whether it's a valuation concern, whether it's just a general profit taking, whether it's a market roll and these get hit, you're going to see some substantial amounts of losses if the rest of the markets don't somehow step in. That's something to watch very carefully. So just keep an eye on the fact that we are in a concentrated position of gains right now from a very few and select sectors and individual names that are really moving stocks very significantly. Now, a couple of things I want to mention before we get to Frank. You know, by the way, for those of you that are new listeners to the show, hello, how are you? Thanks for joining me. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for being a part of this thing. Make sure to tell your friends. Make sure to tell your family. Make sure to retweet when we tweet it. Make sure to repost it on Facebook. Do all the good things that it is to spread the news, to spread the gospel, to make sure that other people know about this and maybe have the opportunity to get some great ideas and education, etc. But the other thing I want to mention to you is, if you didn't know this, I have two books out. But the one I want to focus on is The Disciplined Investor. Yeah, it's the same name as the podcast, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. Now, you can get that, by the way, on in audiobook form. You want to listen in on that. And it goes through areas of quantitative analysis. What's that? Research related to fundamentals and technicals. It talks even about guaranteed investment contracts and talks about how to pick mutual funds. And, you know, you can look at that in terms of what is the right place to go, and talks about just all sorts of areas that will help you out and make you more successful. Because basically it's written in a way that, yeah, some of it is higher end, but basic investment 101. Understanding what it is to be diversified, understanding what it is to look into the area of fundamentals, outlining ratios and, you know, looking at options and just, you know, stock, technical setups, all that's in there. So you can go and grab that at, I guess, Amazon has it, an Audible. You can download the audiobook for The Disciplined Investor. I encourage you to do so. It will help you. So one more thing I'll mention is banks are reporting. We are in the middle of, or the start of, really the beginnings of, earnings season. Here we are again. There's a lot of excitement about what's to come. Thoughts are 17% growth year over year on the heels of more double digits last quarter. And of course, a lot of the benefits from the taxes still pouring in. There was a lot of high hopes for banks. We started to see a few of them report on Friday. And there's some problems there because on the headlines, the numbers look good, but yet the stocks sold off, still selling off throughout the year. Financials are not doing well this year at all. And some of the reason is that we're seeing that the yield curve is flattening and the yield spread, the 2 and 10s, are 0.24. They keep on contracting. That's a real problem. When you see that is starting to contract, that's the sign of a potential for an inversion in rates. And that's not good. That's not good for banks. We have more banks reporting, a lot more banks and financials reporting next week. We're going to start to see some of the tech sector also next week. Again, a lot of excitement about that. That's going to set the stage, I think, for the next few weeks to come. When we get back from our interview with Frank, I just want to talk to you a little bit about Amazon and a couple other things about CPI, et cetera. So let's get right to it. And our special guest today is Frank Curzio. You love him, you know him, you got to have him, from Curzio Research. And we're going to be talking about a lot of different areas because there's a lot of areas to talk about. Frank Curzio, how are you?
Doing great. How's everything going with you, man?
It's been very good. We had a great series of podcasts on FinTech, which I think you listened to recently, which was about 6 or 7 different special episodes, which went over really well. And things are going good. So nice summertime down here. But I want to talk about what's going on with all sorts of areas with the market and talk about some economics, tariffs. Let's start off with oil. Let's start off with the whole oil discussion. Mm-hmm. Oil prices have been rising very significantly. They dropped down after some pushing around by the various parties that be, saying oil prices are too high. Meanwhile, gas prices haven't been really going up very much at all, which is kind of interesting. What's your take on oil? Is it still going to go up for a while? How's it going to impact the economy, the consumer? What's going on here?
It's funny that you say that with the consumer, right? Because you're always going to see articles that saying that, well, you know, it's going to hurt consumer spending and you know, people have less money in their pockets. It's from my 20 years of, you know, basically being a newsletter writer, being a financial analyst, I've never seen that be an issue, no matter where prices went. Maybe outside of maybe 1 or 2 times, right? Remember where it was. Forgot what it was, but right before the credit crisis, where we almost got rid of no one wanted to produce a manufacturer SUVs anymore, right? Now there's more, if you really look, just even if you're in your car, listen to this, just look to your right, look to your left, you're going to see more SUVs than cars. But it's from an investor standpoint, whether that's going to hurt the consumer or hurt stocks, it usually never really does that, right? You know, unless, you know, we had oil price at 90, 100, and we still, so the market's still, you know, go to record highs before, you know, this is 2014, they're still at record highs. So I don't know if there's really any correlation to that or any evidence behind that. But I will say with oil price, which is an industry I cover a lot, I visit every major shale area in the United States. It's a market where I thought at $40 was absolute steal, especially $45, $35. Just because we cannot produce tons of oil at that price. In certain areas, in like 4 counties out of the numerous counties, dozens or so in the Permian, you'll see people say, well, we could produce for 30, 35. It's more like 45, 50. So when we fall below those levels, you could just look at the production in America. You're going to see it drop like crazy, drop over a million when we really fell below 45 to 35. I think it was 20, 29 was low, whatever it was. So you know, at these levels right now where it is, I think it's a little bit higher than lower. I think it's going to be – I think the fair market is probably between 65 and 70. I think we're a little bit above that now. And it could go to 80, but I think it'll retrace a little bit. But more important from an investor standpoint, you have to realize the oil company is going to report some of the strongest earnings this earnings season. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's factored into a lot of these stocks where – my mistake was is I saw this oil changing and I invested in oil stocks. For some reason, oil prices jumped 30%. Oil stocks fell 15%. It was a major disconnect. They've come back now. We've done very, very well in this industry. But when I'm looking at the stocks and how terrible the industry was, well, the hedges they had came off and you know it wasn't economical for them to produce it. It was sitting a massive amount of debt. These companies all restructured their debt, the ones that came through 2004, 2015, 2016. They're going to see massive, massive profits, huge amount of money coming in. They're even cautious to spend that on oil. I'm not really seeing that spending on further production and further CapEx. So the balance sheets, what they're doing is taking that money, they're actually paying down their debt. But those earnings are going to be very, very strong. And I don't know if that's factored into some of these stocks that have moved up 30-35%. But remember, they've come down tremendously in 14, 15, and 16 when this market crashed.
You know, it's interesting that we have a very strict screen that looks for earnings growth that's consistent, revenues growth that's consistent, expanding margins, a variety of different things, right? That you have to make these and out of, I don't know, 5,000 stocks, maybe 50, 60, 70, maybe come through that screen, okay? What's interesting is that recently, probably last 6 months, a variety of oil stocks finally started coming through there, like Laredo's in there. We have, I think, RPC's in there. There's a couple other names in there, maybe about, I would say, like four or five different oil-related companies that are in that, or energy sector companies that are in that screen. I think that's pretty amazing.
I think it's – I mean, Laredo, I'm familiar with. Be careful with that one because just because they're hedged a lot. So if oil prices go higher, they're not going to benefit as much as everybody else. But if they go lower, they'll be good because they're hedging at higher prices. But
Newfield Energy's in there. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying it, but the bigger picture I'm talking about, not those exact names, the bigger picture that these energy stocks actually made it through the screen.
Yeah, and I really don't think that a lot of them are reflected in that price. I mean, there's a lot of players. You're seeing companies like Viper, which is VNOM, which I love. They had a structure where it's a royalty play, so you don't have to worry about them paying for it. Basically, they own land in the Permian, a lot of cheaper areas. It's like a division off of FANG. Diamondback Energy, it's a stock that's just gone straight up for us. We're fortunate enough to know someone who really is familiar with this industry and knows that stock well. But you're seeing like these plays come up where like even royalty plays in this space that makes sense because, you know, they don't have to take on that production budget, but yet they get a certain percentage of everything that's produced by everybody else paying for this and oil prices going up. Yeah, these things have a royalty structure and some of them have an MLP structure. So they're paying out all those profits, 90% or more, as long as it's related to oil in dividends to investors. And it's kind of interesting to see some of the unique structures coming out. And a lot of those are doing well. And yeah, everything's really good in oil right now. I like it. I think I wouldn't really go with the majors right here. I think I'd go more with shale players because they can produce like crazy over $50 a barrel. Every single shale area is profitable right now. So you're going to see these guys continue to profit. And be careful, though, here, because what does that mean? It means that we're going to see a lot of production come online, yep. and that's yep. going to flood the markets, right. and that should push prices down. But for now, when we're looking strictly at earnings, these are earnings play now, which they haven't really been earnings plays, you know, over the past few years.
Right. You know, it's also interesting. I mean, my baseline theory on oil, aside from some of the supply-demand issues that obviously move those markets, is that you have Saudi Arabia who is trying to push this Aramco deal out, and they'll do anything to get that price boosted because if they can keep oil prices, you know, above a certain level or at least, you know, reasonably high, they can price that IPO a lot better. Don't forget, they put that IPO off when they thought, you know, maybe we can push oil prices higher, and they've done so very successfully. Now we have Iranian oil coming off the market, potentially, I think in November. And that's going to be like 1 million barrels a day. So yeah, these if we keep oil at these levels and if Saudi Arabia is successful at trying to keep these up and they get their deal off, you know, their Aramco deal off, then that's it's a good thing. It's a good thing for oil. Now, the question again is, you know, you hear this, and I think that what Frank was saying at the beginning was he was debunking the idea that, hey, you know, you hear these analysts when they talk about, well, higher oil prices are going to really crimp the consumer. Meanwhile, when there's lower oil prices, you know, in theory, we should be helping the consumer. Now, much more of the bull side of the story is always about, well, it's like a tax cut. You know, when you have oil prices going down, your gas price going down is really great for the consumer. But most of them don't say, hey, you know what? The opposite is true. But somehow the consumers, you know, the old consumers resilient discussion, I think, comes up. So you don't think this is going to be an issue if we see oil in this area, you know, gas price in this area. You think that we're okay right now and the consumers can handle it?
From that's not even – I really think as an individual investor, you'd be wasting your time trying to – if you're basing your portfolio strategies on if oil prices go to $80, that's going to result in less consumer spending, especially when you have homeowners right now sitting on $5.7 trillion in home equity in their homes.
Yeah,
that they
haven't the highest ever.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, you know, a minor amount of money here that really does not hurt the stock, like certain stocks or certain spending and people cutting back to the point where you're seeing that and people say, well, it drives the economy. Believe me, the consumers find this they're spending a lot of money and everything else. It really isn't an issue. I mean, we haven't seen an issue. It's not an issue. And I hear it mentioned all the time. But, you know, I don't want to see people wasting their time saying, well, that's going to be if oil prices go high, you're not going to see the market crash. You're not going to see stocks come down because people don't have enough money to spend on consumer items or discretionary items and things like that.
Let's talk about something that is potentially questionable in terms of the economy. And this is somebody wrote me in saying that we have somewhat differing views on this whole tariff shenanigans that are going on. My view is pretty clear that tariffs are not a good thing. Now, are they a bad thing is another discussion entirely. But my baseline thesis on this is that, you know what, if we look back historically at tariffs, they have not, it's not good for the consumer. It's, you know, if they actually go through and they're, you know, on a global basis and we end up in a trade war. It just, there's nothing really helpful about this. Now, on the other hand, we can make the argument that China has been stealing from us and taking from us and doing all this stuff. And if we do make that argument, by the way, Frank, you know, even if that is the case, it's not like we could do better, but we've done pretty darn well with the merchandise that we bought for them, a lot cheaper, the manufacturing they've done over the years at a lot cheaper rate than we can do here. And yes, maybe they're stealing some of the jobs and maybe their pricing is unfair and maybe they're bringing stuff into their country, trying to prop up their stuff versus ours. But at the same time, you know, we're doing pretty well over here. But I don't
think
we are,
but there's bigger issues than that, Andrew, I would say, because one is, you're right, we are doing pretty good over here. And that's a good point. But you know, studies have come out that they're stealing $600 billion of our intellectual property. And if you've gone to China, I've been to China and been fooled. And I specifically went to China to tell everyone that, listen, I'm here seeing in this story, this why it's, and I've had CEOs of companies show me assets that are in their books that I've read in their 10-Ks and showing me their assets. And I'm coming back reporting saying, hey guys, I saw these assets. I went to China and they didn't even own those assets. So when it comes to China, it's the amount of money that they're stealing from us is one thing. I mean, think about it. Things that we create, they just go over there and steal it. I mean, the $600 billion.
I agree. That's a problem. I agree.
That's a problem. The other problem is it's you have to look at it. And guys, put politics aside. It has nothing to do with politics. But look at what China has been doing, right? They're dumping cheap steel on the market. Some people might say, well, you know, cheap, that's good, right? That's better for the consumer. It's better for the consumer if it happens inside our borders. Because when China does it, what happens? Our steel producers, if you look at the utilization, how much, you know, capacity that they were operating at was 50, 60%, right? It's supposed to be at 100% at maximum capacity if things are great. They've cut it so much because China's dumping cheap steel on our markets. And you could say, well, that's good for the consumer. But what happens in the long term? We cannot compete. We close all of our manufacturers, right? All our steel manufacturers, and then we fire all the employees. Okay, and you might say like, all right, fine, but we're still making up on the other end. But what do you think China's going to do then? Do you think they're going to keep prices low? They're going to raise the hell out of the prices, and then next thing you know, we have another OPEC situation where they go, now we produce a ton of oil and we limit that exposure, but we're basically at the mercy of other countries controlling prices of something that it's a necessity for us. And that's the bigger picture here where I think you need to understand where, not you understand, but people need to understand where it is unfair what a lot of these guys are doing. And what we're looking is to be fair. And you brought up a good point because you said, you know, you think tariffs are bad. Well, right now we're saying, how about we eliminate all tariffs? Wouldn't that make it fair for everyone has the same exact deal? And do you notice who's arguing right now, right? Everybody else. Why? Because when it comes to tariffs, when it comes to trade wars, the people that get hurt the most, if you look at it, are the people who have surpluses, not the people who have deficits. So right. The deficit, because you're going to close your deficit. But look at it as a corporation, Andrew. If you're going to lose, if you're a semiconductor and Apple is your largest supplier and it accounts for 56% of your sales and you lose them, what's going to like? What do you think is going to happen to China? What do you think is going to happen to the EU, where these countries aren't on the good standings that we're on? I mean, they don't have great economies right now. They're not growing like we are. These guys are risking a massive, massive recession by fighting us a trade war. So what you're going to hear is a lot of news out there, a lot of stories like China's going to do this. And it's, if you break down the numbers, man, it's so meaningless when you break down the numbers. It really is. I mean, and I've looked at math of this. If you look at the tariffs on washing machines, solar panels, steel products, aluminum products, it represents less than 2% of all U.S. imports. If you really look at how much it costs with steel, I mean, even if you're increasing tariffs by 15%, it amounts to like $150 extra on a car on a profit margins of $4,000. But if you throw in a tax cuts, it's adding like $500. So you're looking at autos making $350, you know, even with a 15%. So what you're hearing is a lot of noise, because you're not going to hear countries just say, okay, the U.S. wants this and we're okay. You're going to hear them behind the scenes. They're going to have to comply. They're going to have to make trade fair, and that's going to happen. So my thesis on this is, ignore it. It's not going to be a story 2-3 months from now. And I've been saying that for the last 2-3 months, and stocks are near all-time highs. Things are fine, even though you continue to see this risk come out. Now, with that said, really quick, we have two different strategies. So for me, I'm like, guys, just ignore it, because I'm more of buy stocks, hold them for until their catalysts get recognized, so come to fruition, 6 months to 18 months. But if you're a trader, like what you love to do, Andrew, I mean, you'll see the market pull back 500 points, go up 300 points in this news. So yeah, it is relevant as a trader. For right. my style, I'm like, guys, ignore it. It's not a big deal. You're going to hear stories come out. But in the end, it's going to be settled behind closed doors. And this is all a form of diplomacy. And so far, the last 2 months, I really think it's kind of a non-issue. And the stocks are basically trading the same levels they were trading 3 months ago, when this really was a major story.
I agree with that. However, but if we look at individual stocks, for example, you mentioned washing machines. Since the tariffs were announced on washing machines, Whirlpool's down like 18%. Harley Davidson, for example, when we talk about steel and other tariffs, down like 20%. So, you know, you have to wonder that if these tariffs are a non-issue, and if there's, you know, the idea is to help and look at U.S. steel down like 18% since these tariffs were announced. If these tariffs are a non-issue and they're designed to help certain companies in the U.S. compete against other companies that are maybe either dumping or countries dumping or unfairly marking their prices, which is dumping. How come Whirlpool is not doing well? How come Harley Davidson is saying, screw this, we're out of here? How come U.S. Steel is down so much? I mean, I don't understand. What is the, you know, what is the problem?
Listen, you bring up a good point, because Whirlpool might have more exposure, so does Harley Davidson. But if you're looking at, if you're really in Whirlpool right now, or if you're looking at Whirlpool, I think it's a screaming buy. I think Harley Davidson's a screaming buy, okay? Because this is in anticipation on what's going to happen. And for me, I'm saying that it's not going to happen. So people looking at Whirlpool,
it is happening. What are you talking about? It is happening.
In a month or two from now, this is going to be settled, and this is going to, and everything is going to work itself out.
Let's just look at Whirlpool, for example. Forget about the 200, 500, 17 billion, whatever. Whirlpool. There are tariffs that were put on imported washing machines at the same time the original steel was put on, but imported washing machines, there was a tariff put on to help out our domestic companies. Let's just stop there. Forget about any other tariff, okay? The tariff goes on to help ours, and that was to make sure that we get some benefits somehow, somewhere else, to make it, good. And Whirlpool drops 18%. Now, what's going to come if that was meant to help our companies? Because therefore, the U.S. would be saying, well, you know, if we have a washing machine from Samsung, for example, or pick your other imported washing machine, then we got a choice of buying that or the Whirlpool, and the price is about the same, or maybe Whirlpool is less now because of the tariff. We'll buy the Whirlpools. Therefore, Whirlpool should have seen an uptick in theirs. And if, in fact, the tariffs on the imported goods raise the price so much, Whirlpool has the opportunity to raise their prices, because then, you know, hey, why not? Why is the stock languishing? I don't understand.
you can't control where a stock goes. You can't. You can't control. It's all perception, right? But if you look at
their earnings, I'm telling you, their earnings have not been good.
But look at their earnings. Their earnings are $15.05, and they actually came out recently and said that if you look at their earnings estimates right now, you probably have it on Bloomberg if you want to bring it up. See what the earnings estimates are for 2018 and see what they are 4 months ago. I bet you they haven't changed much.
Well, you think this is all tariff related and it's
it's markets trade on anticipation. That's what they trade on. So that's what they're trading on, where Whirlpool's going to get crushed. You're looking at Harley Davidson's going to get crushed. But when you look at their actual, when you look at Whirlpool's earnings and bring them up right now, they haven't changed. So you're seeing perception. And that's why for me, I think Whirlpool is a great buying opportunity. I think Harley Davidson's a great buying opportunity because I really feel that China and the EU, they have no choice. They have no choice. They know that the amount of money that they've been making. And again, when you go back and you look at history, and I've done a ton of work on this and wrote a whole report on this, a free report if anybody wants it, how, you know, if you date back to history where you had the 1930s and the Great Depression.
The Smoot Hawleys.
Yeah. So you have, you know, what would people say? Well, it led to you know, World War II, and it led to, you know, protectionism and things like that. Well, you know, the U.S. had a massive surplus back then. They didn't have a deficit. It was different conditions. And then you're looking at, well, you know, people don't want to cite like all the facts of that. They're like, well, look what it led to. And you have Germany and Japan who don't have a lot of resources. You know, that's why they invaded Poland and France and dictatorship and stuff like that. We're not there, guys. Just, for me, I just think is it going to impact certain companies? Yeah, you have companies that have exposure. But if you look at the actual earnings, for me, this is more a perception like, wow, Whirlpool. It's if you really want to see if this is going to be a big deal, I could tell you what a good tell would be. Look at rare earth metals, because China controls more than 90% of that market. We are in dire need of that. Japan's in dire need from that. Everyone's in dire need of these rare earth metals, and China controls that market. If China really wanted to screw us and there was a trade war, that's it. So if I see that, if I see them saying, okay, you know what, because that's what happened with Japan. It would happen 2010 rare earth metals. I don't know if you remember that market boom. Those prices of rare earths went up 500% in months, 500%, because they basically told Japan that we're not going to export to you guys anymore. And Japan was like, holy cow, what do we do? So if I see that, that would make me take this more seriously, because that's where China could really screw us. But the fact it's like, oh, we're going to raise a little bit over here. We're going to do – this is all stuff showing the world that we're not going to be bullied, but behind the scenes, they're going to have no choice to basically solve this. And I think that's what's going on right now. So for Whirlpool, you bring up good points.
I'm bringing up Whirlpool, and I'm looking at revenue on Whirlpool, and we look at it from 12/31/2017. Revenue is $5.7 billion. Total revenue 3/31/2018 was $4.9 billion. Gross profit dropped from $985 million. That was billion. This one's a million. Dropped from $985 million to $812 billion. And so they are dropping a bit, but
because what I see for the earnings per share is $14.50, and then as of last quarter, they actually raised it to $15.28.
Well, something's out of whack if that's the case.
Yeah, so for me, when I look at this, could it impact sales? Yeah, could it? Yes, if this really stays, if this really happens. But for me, I think we really need to for the U, again, politics aside, I don't like the way Trump's handling this. I hate it. But even if you look at Democrats, even if you look at hate like a current administration, they're all saying that, I mean, it's a joke. It has to change. I mean, what's going on right now and how we're being taken advantage of has to change. And that's what we're all looking for. But you know, the fact that we have our president of the United States tweeting these remarks to other countries saying you screw it, you know, it's not being handled the right way. But more important, guys, look, you could point out isolated situations and everything, but if you're looking at the bigger picture where we're being told the trade war is going to destroy the markets, obviously that's not the case. Where the stocks are trading now, look at what's been going on for the last 3-4 months. Again, you pointed out like one or two situations, but when I look at the market as a whole, to me, this isn't really a big deal.
Okay, well, let's switch gears here for a second. Then let's talk.
I like disagreeing with you, by the way.
I don't like you now. Click. Let's talk about banks, because now we have a couple things going on. The banks started to come in this week. Coming up is the big numbers, and you know, we can talk about a few things here, but big picture banks now. So there's been some discussion about the 2 and 10s and the yield curve flattening and all this other stuff, potential inversion. The Fed is now, which they like to look at the 2s and 10s, but they're getting so tight, they said, screw the 2s and 10s. We're not using that anymore as a benchmark. We're going to use the 5s and 10s, I believe they're going to be using now. You know, if you don't like what the numbers show, we'll change the way that we calculate this. But banks. So banks, you know, it's interesting because they have more income than they've ever had before. The balance sheets are fixed up also nicely, generally speaking. But yet their prices are still way below where they were at the height of their existence. Now, you know, for a lot of different reasons, but, you know, the banks are some of the favorite of, you know, if you listen to anybody on anywhere, what do you like? I like the banks and I like technology. I mean, that's what everybody says, right? I like the financials, especially the big banks. You know, the smaller banks, the regionals are doing a lot better. They have less exposure, maybe to some of the areas in Europe, like Italy and some of the problems they have with their bonds, maybe the emerging markets. What's your take on banks?
I just buy one of the top four large cap banks. For me, I really like Citigroup here. I think it's an absolute steal, and just holding your portfolio and you're going to, I don't know if I could find a better stock based on risk reward than Citigroup right now in the whole entire S&P 500.
You know what's fascinating about Citi? If you look at their chart, split adjusted and all the other stuff from way back when, oh my God, it looks like it has a, you know, potential for enormous upside to get back to where it was. I mean, ridiculous.
It's look, they were behind the curve when it came to JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells, right? So they're behind the curve where they didn't do as good as a stress test past couple of years. This year, they passed with flying colors. They were more in restructuring mode while everybody else was trying to find ways to grow. Now that they've turned that corner, they're trading at a significant discount to the industry, 9x earnings compared to around 12x earnings.
Right.
But when you look at the banks, and listen, I feel like I'm making a couple bold calls here, but this is going to be one where, you know, I want to talk to the people who are retired, because in our industry, as you know, in the newsletter industry, it's filled with bold calls from people who are pretty much unqualified. And, you know, they scare the hell out of you in an email saying that the world's going to end. I could really tell you this with confidence, that the chances of us having another credit crisis in our lifetime is basically zero.
I would tend to agree with that here in the United States here. I mean, it could be something else. Europe is not, their banks are still, you know, sugar-coated
absolutely.
And all that. But absolutely. Here I agree with you that's generally, I agree.
Mean, Andrew, I did a lot of analysis on the numbers. If you look, they're sitting on 350, the 35 banks for the stress test that passed, well, Deutsche could say they didn't pass, but they passed in some measures. They're just not allowed to return capital. They're sitting on $350 billion in cash and high-quality assets. That's cash and money in treasuries that they're not allowed to lend. They just got to sit there with it. They can't do anything with it because of Dodd-Frank. Which tells you one thing. Another thing, if you really look at what caused the credit crisis, people think, well, it's subprime loans or maybe it's securitization. No, if just those two things alone would have brought down the financials a little bit, and they would have brought down the housing market. What almost ended Western civilization as we know it is the fact that they leveraged themselves with these securitizations where they pull these loans together.
41, yep.
4-1, right? Now it's 10-1. To put that in perspective, it's the lowest leverage they've ever had, and they have a watchdog up there, you know what, watching every single thing that they do. So they can't have off-balance sheet stuff. They can't have any of this stuff. They're not allowed to do anything. Yet, these are guys that are reporting record profits right now. You just saw past a little bit of deregulation, which is a start, which means, you know, they'll probably be able to invest a little bit of that money that's sitting on their balance sheets. If you're looking at the ratios, even like it's not even tier one. It's one that's even more stringent than that called CET1. You don't need to know the numbers behind it. But just to put in perspective, 4.5% is the benchmark that they have to pass. These guys are at 12.5%, 13%.
No, the banks are in great shape. I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
I agree. But for me, I just feel like there's a sentiment out there that people are still worried about, like, you know, like systemic risk, the entire system collapsing. The banks could fall another 10% here, and I could be wrong on Citigroup. That's fine. That's the markets. But the chances of a global financial crisis that what we had is not going to happen again.
Let's qualify that. A global financial crisis based on the banks and the financial institutions in the U.S. Because, you know what? Everything cycles. Let's be honest. We don't know what the next thing is out there. I just don't know. I'm just saying. Who knows it's the emerging markets implosion. It's the Venezuela inflation issue that's going to – I don't know what it is, but something. But I agree with you 100% that the financial crisis – that is based on what we saw before. Because don't forget, we had the long-term capital management. We've had various times over the years that we've had banking crises and other types of off-balance sheet deals with other types of companies and the, you know, the super valuations of the 2000s. It's something that rolls around every 10 years or so.
No, I agree with you 100%. I agree. But it's just – but this isn't – the credit crisis wasn't something that rolled around 10 years ago.
That was a lot different.
So that's what I'm saying, because I just feel like that sentiment is out. Now, getting back to the theory on banks, for these guys, I mean, you have – you just have a lot of positives, right? You have interest rates, which is supposedly going higher, right? We need the spreads to go higher. which most economists predict that's going to happen, which is going to increase net interest margins, which is going to increase profits for the banks. You have the tax reforms, which helps everybody, but it helps the banks 10 times more because they're one of the highest tax sectors out of everybody.
Right.
They already reported record profits last quarter, and they would have done so.
Meanwhile, for whatever reason, by the way, with record profits, they stink. The stocks stink.
Yeah, the stocks, and not only with record profits, that was, I think it was $45 billion in total or something, but whatever it was, but $6 billion was from tax. Even if you take out the $6 billion plus in profit generation from tax, it was still a record.
I agree.
So for me, when I look at this industry and you're seeing it coming down and you're looking from a trader's point of view, which is great because, look, these things have come down another 5, 10%, right? You want to get them at the perfect time when they're breaking out a little bit, and you haven't seen that yet. But for me, as someone that looks at banks and you're looking long term, Citigroup's dividend right now is like 1.5%. They're returning $22 billion. You can say, okay, they return $22 billion in capital back. So they're going to buy back pretty much like 10% of their float, and their dividend is going to go from 1.3 or 4 to 2.7%. Yeah. Now, let's put that in perspective really quick, because what do we know that we argued all the time, right? We're like, how can people buy the consumer staples? They need yield. You're looking at utilities, you're looking at consumer staples trading at 19, 20 times earnings and not growing sales.
Those, by the way, that's ridiculous. The consumer staple area at the level, the levels of, you know, because the consumer staples are one of the areas that if the tariffs do hit, they can be hit pretty hard because of the way, like, you know, what they do. A lot of exporting and all that. And on top of that, the higher dollar. So you got to look at that. And then on top of it, their multiples are ridiculous.
So that, what would you rather own? Now you have a
kind I'd rather of, own banks versus Morgan, right? Staples.
So you have higher yields, better earnings quality. The earnings are going higher, and they have all this capital on the balance sheet. If deregulation even goes further, they're able to out 10% of that capital and loan more. You get higher yields, just cheaper prices. For me, I just see a major, major rotation because we've seen these consumer staples and we argued, and I was wrong, and I'm going, holy cow, they're crazy prices, 17, 18, and it went to 19, 20, 22.
Right.
McDonald's. You know, through the roof. For me, I think there's going to be a massive rotation into banks because they just have they're growing faster, they're cheaper, and they're paying higher yields than you know, almost any alternative in the market right now.
Yeah. So what about, so we're not going to, I mentioned on a quick email that I sent you, let's talk about Tesla. And you replied, by the way, just full disclosure, you write, we can skip Tesla. My thesis is the same as everyone else on this. That's what you wrote back to me.
I wrote it because, I've done the numbers on Tesla, and I just
there are no numbers.
It's funny that he's like, I mean, we're not going to have to raise money. And when you look at the numbers in the billions, listen, they might not have to raise money this year, but they're going to have to raise money like January 2nd. and the fact that he's really focused, I think it's more of a red flag that he's really focusing on the media now and getting pissed off at things. Sorry if I can say it, but he's getting really ticked off at things like that. Going after the media and stuff like that. I just think he's losing
his focus.
Well,
not only media, he's going after individuals.
Yeah, and everyone, you know, but the thing is, what worries me with this stock is there's, and what I meant by that, which is funny now that you read it, is I'm not going to say anything that's not has that
you're not gonna,
already.
You're not going to add to the argument, is your point.
And here's the thing, there's nothing that I could say that's already been added to this, which makes me think, based on my experience, because I've been wrong a few times, not a lot, because otherwise I'd have to find another job. But when you have the same thesis as everybody else, it kind of makes you think that that should be priced into the stock right now.
So what are you saying? It's going to go up from here?
I'm saying there's a good shot that you can see a massive short squeeze because the whole entire world is short on this stock. And the fact that they're all short for the same exact reason. I mean, look at Herbalife. How long did
how weird was that?
He tried to prove that was a Ponzi scheme. But after 3 years and you can't do it, it's not a Ponzi scheme.
It was proven to be some wrongfully created their business practices were found to be a problem. They were fined $230 million, $240 million, something like that. And they were told that they have to change their business practices. Meanwhile, you would think with that was a very big, hey, Ackman, you were right about this. And if they do change their business model to be less of a multi-level marketing concept and all that, then what's going to happen is they're no longer going to be able to make the money that they made before. Therefore, okay, you are right. Meanwhile, the stock goes straight upwards.
I disagree just because I don't think he was right, because what he was saying is that the company's absolute fraud should be worth zero. What they did is they have a business model that millions of companies have. Could it be described as a Ponzi scheme? Depends how you define it, because if you go online and Facebook, and there's a lot of people who have, you know, younger kids and children, my wife has friends where they're selling all these beauty products and they have to bring on more people and more people and they get paid more money. So is it a legal business? Well, you know, no. it's not a, but he was basically saying this is an illegal business. This is fraud. This is going to go to zero. And for me, I didn't think, listen, did they, I think you can go to any business. Look at Comcast. I mean, Comcast charges me more every single, like, I have no idea. I'll talk to five different people.
It's not like, hey, Frank, ring, ring. Hey, Frank, how you doing? Oh, yeah, good. Oh, hey, I was thinking about having a little Comcast party. Invite your friends. I got this great product I want to show you. You know what I mean? That's
what you did, though. You called me about your whole trading system. You said you're going to have friends over and we're going to talk about
it. Oh, yeah, we have a trading system party. Yeah, we have an investment advisor party. I guess they call them seminars in our business.
Now, you have a point. For me, when he's going out and trying to hire, lobbying to the government so they can investigate this firm, my point of the whole thing is not really Herbalife, but when, for me, my mistakes have been made when I'm on the same side as everybody else. It's usually priced into the stock. So it's going to be interesting where are they going to raise capital? They have to raise capital based on the numbers. I've done a lot of research, but they have to raise it.
Of course.
I've covered this on my Kersey Research Facebook page. Where I do live videos and stuff. But you could see any positive news or anything. I mean, the amount of shorts on this thing could push this thing up 30% like in a couple months. And we saw that happen before coming back down. Just be careful if you're going to short this thing, because that's easy for the professionals, not for individual investors.
I hear you. All right, Frank Kersey, listen, lots of great information. We're going to put all the stocks that you mentioned on the show notes for this episode, which is episode number 571 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. You can follow Frank Kersey over on Twitter. Frank, what's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is Frank Kersey. Just go right on. You'll find me.
Frank Kersey, and he's got that wonderful Facebook page. You know how much I love Facebook. Facebook page.
and live Facebook videos.
Facebook videos. He's got live Facebook videos. He's got great stuff. He's got some wonderful newsletters. Some of the best people in the industry writing about all sorts of really cool things. So make sure to check that out over on KerseyResearch.com. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
I love it, man. Thanks for inviting me, buddy.
As always, great to have you, buddy. Thanks. All right, let's get on. I was mentioning before we talked to Frank a little bit about what's going on with Amazon. Yep, here they go again. Amazon's hitting again. And this time, I think this is probably was definitely was unsuspected. They're starting to sell switches right against Cisco. Cisco was down about 4%. A few of the other related names also down in the area of switches and kind of interesting. It's going to be an open source deal. It's going to be, kind of very interesting to see how this plays out, because Amazon has been taking on industry after industry. Why not? I mean, they have so much money. I mean, they have so much money. They're doing what companies should be doing. While a lot of companies are, so busy with their buybacks and their increase of their dividends and trying to optimize everything with regard to their financial engineering, Amazon is going after, in a competitive way, other areas of the markets. Things we haven't seen yet are still going to probably be coming. We talked about the drugs and pharmacy that they recently bought for delivery. That was a couple of weeks back. We know what's going on with, of course, Whole Foods and the whole area of food service or food markets. And now they're looking at, again, outside the realm of what you would think, but their AWS division, and I guess links into this pretty well. They're going to be in the technology area and spreading the wings there. Who knows what's next? Autonomous driving and upsetting the entire ride, quote unquote, ride sharing area. I'm hoping they get into ticketing somehow, ticketing for concerts and get rid of this whole StubHub and Ticketmaster ripoff game. Oh, that would be fantastic. Jeff Bezos, do me a favor. Get into the ticketing area. Clean this mess up so we can all go back to seeing concerts without the ticket charge and service charge and maintenance fee and all the other, the 12 different fees that you have to pay aside from the actual concert or show. That would be just brilliant. Just fantastic. But Amazon is doing well, hit an all-time high, along with many of the other big names last week. And they're doing some really impressive work. So hats off to you guys. I also mentioned that there is some concern about the yield curve, the 2 and 10 spread. This is the calculation of the differential between the 2-year treasury and the 10-year treasury. And why is that important? Well, historically, there's been a lot of writing about this recently. I've done some work in this area. When you look at historical reference to when the 2 and 10 years invert, in other words, when the 2-year yield becomes higher than the 10-year yield, that usually precipitates a recession within about 2 years. The data has shown that this happens pretty much all the time. There's been 5 different instances over the last 5 or 6 decades that this has happened, and a recession does come into play. Now, whether or not this is going to be that indicator, whether or not we get there, I will tell you that we started the week at about 30 basis points differential, and now we're down to 0.24. So we're tightening very quickly. There's a lot of reasons that there's some talk about why this is happening, aside from the fact that just the Fed is increasing rates, but what's going on also in Europe and Japan and with their quantitative easing programs and how they're probably pushing on ours and, you know, getting the they're buying our bonds in, on the short side, on the 10-year side, and maybe selling theirs. And, you know, obviously the currency issues, all these different things that come into play. It may not be just as simple as what's happening in our economy. And a lot of analysts are starting to say, well, maybe we shouldn't be looking at that. You know, starting to get too close to for comfort here. Even the treasuries I mentioned, the Fed that I mentioned, is starting to say, well, maybe we won't look at this either anymore as an area of concern, of something that we shouldn't be watching very closely. We're going to switch over. Some other metric. We know how that goes. Something to watch, though. Definitely keep your eyes peeled on this, because I think it's an important area to consider. Again, it's not like all of a sudden if you have an inversion, that's it. 2 days later, you have a recession and everything, you know, all bets are off. But if markets are forward looking and we do see that rates are rising on the short end, and that obviously will be problematic for short term corporate lending. And it will be a problem for borrowing. It will be a problem to the extent that we're going to see that it costs more to get money. And more importantly, the banks, that's how they make money with the spreads. If this spread does continue to contract and invert, that would be something that would really pique my attention, perk my interest, make me say, we got to watch this. And then take a different eye into the midterm level of where we're going into the future. But something to chew on. Something to chew on. If you want to follow me over on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, I lost like 2,000 users or followers last week on the whole Twitter purge. This is going to need more investigation also. This whole 70 or 75 or 80 million users that Twitter has purged from their systems that were either bots or fake users or inactive users for an extended period of time. They just took out of the system. Supposedly, these are users that they never counted. John Dvorak and myself, well, we kind of debunked that on DH Unplugged last week. That's on Tuesday nights, by the way, at 9 o'clock, or over on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. What else do we have to talk about? We talked about the tariffs. We know that there's another $200 billion that's being tariffed potentially at the rate of 10%. But there's going to be a discussion period. We'll see how that plays out. And we don't know what's going to happen with this. We don't know if it's just a gambit. It's a negotiation tactic. If it's something that's really going to happen, seems like, you know, China's not backing down. And next week, a lot of earnings are going to be starting to flow, like I mentioned. So keep an eye on that. We'll come back next week and talk about a lot of the things that happened this week with regard to earnings, because I think it's really going to set the stage, like I mentioned. Otherwise, we're going to call it a day right there. Thanks again for joining me. Don't forget to retweet, send it out to your friends and family. Please spread the news. It means a lot to me. I really appreciate it. Of course, if you have any questions over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, there's a little button that says Ask Andrew. Just click that button and ask, whether it's about your 401k, question about maybe taxes, maybe about a particular, you know, investment that you're looking at. If we can answer it directly, we will. If we maybe we'll put it on the show, mention your name on the show and get some credit for it, and maybe help our audience that has a similar question. So don't be shy about that. Any financial question, this is your opportunity to get some free advice. More free advice. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and click on that. Ask Andrew. and we'll get it on there. Otherwise, I'm going to see you next week. Thanks for joining me.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.